Surprises left behind at the site, Danielle gathered everyone to teleport back to Greenstone.
"What about the skimmers?" Clive asked. "I can't just leave the Magic Society's vehicles here."
"Yes, you can," Danielle said. "I'll make sure it's smoothed over. Once the Adventure Society hears about what happened here, they'll be crawling over this place and roping Magic Society people in with them. They'll bring them back."
Danielle's teleportation power was unable to affect others without their consent, so Jory fed Silver a potion to wake him up. He opened bleary eyes to find he had been sat in Jason's chair, with Jason and Sophie looking down at him.
"Good morning, sunshine," Jason said. "You're about to have a rough day, mate."
Silver's eyes went wide. He tried to leap out of the chair, only for Gary's huge hands to land on his shoulders and push him back down. Silver was strong, but Gary was stronger.
"Asano," Silver snarled. "Wexler, what happened? How are you not a meat puppet?"
"Rugged good looks," Jason said. "What happened to your creepy elf mate?"
The fury continued to burn in Silver's eyes, but he pulled himself under control.
"You have to go after him. This was all his idea. I had no idea he was going to use a starseed."
"Mate, your words won't be as garbled if you stop talking out your ass. You can lie all you like once we get back to town. Just shut up and accept the teleport."
"Teleport?"
Silver looked around, noticing the others.
"Why would I go along with you?"
"Because if you don't," Sophie said, her voice an icy needle, "then you get to stay here with me."
Silver paled, then angrily covered the flash of fear.
"You're nothing, Wexler. If it wasn't for my father, I'd have used you up and then tossed you into a brothel. If you were even still alive at this point, you'd be drugged to the eyeballs, lying in a filthy bed waiting for the next guy to take his turn."
Sophie leaned forward, bringing her face right up to Silver's, her mouth a hungry smile and her eyes silver daggers.
"Oh, I know," she said. "That's why I'm hoping you make me take you back to town the long way. The very, very long way."
Jason was finally home, alone in his room in the Cloud Boathouse. With a thought, dark mist swirled around him, and all his clothing but his underwear vanished. He staggered over and fell into the cool embrace of his cloud bed. As the softness enveloped him, all the things he had been holding back were fully unleashed. Everything he had pushed away since his capture flooded over him in full force. He was left shuddering, curled up in a fetal position. The exhaustion not of his body but of his soul finally caught up with him and plunged him into a restless slumber. He was woken by morning light coming through the transparent ceiling he hadn't turned opaque before falling asleep. He was still shaky but somewhat purged. His reaction of the day before had worked something out of his system. He reconsidered that perhaps knowledge hadn't been lying after all. He was better than the day before, but that wasn't the same as good. His experiences of the last few days were a blurry mess, yet he knew they would haunt him for the rest of his life. When his team brought him home, Danielle had suggested he remain there with an Adventure Society official to watch over him, if only for the sake of propriety. She knew he wasn't likely to want to leave anyway, and it was only until the Church of the Healer gave him a thorough examination.
"Just until we confirm you're all clear of the starseed," she had told him.
The team gathered together on the deck for a big breakfast cooked by Gary, which meant meat, more meat, and some eggs. With meat. Jason had his first genuine smile in what felt like forever as he looked around at everyone happily tucking into breakfast. He was struck with the feeling that he might, eventually, be okay. The team naturally coddled him, but he begged off after breakfast, asking for some time alone. He went up to the top deck of the houseboat, staying outside where the Adventure Society official could see him. He wasn't going to give the stranger access to the internal areas of his houseboat. It was a mild winter day, actually rather pleasant, with clear blue skies. With a mental command, a cloud-stuffed lounger rose up out of the floor. He laid down and used the wrist razor Gilbert had incorporated into all his outfits to slash the back of his hand, letting a single member of Team Colin emerge. Colin crawled up Jason's arm to rest on his shoulder.
Feeling better, little mate? How about we take a look to see if you got any stronger from all that?
Jason looked at the system messages, still minimized at the corner of his vision. Taking a deep breath, he started pulling them up one by one. Many of them were just warnings about his powers being suppressed, which wasn't much use given he couldn't see them until his abilities were unsuppressed again. Others were more important.
Outworld racial ability, quest system, has evolved to Defiant. Ability, Defiant, transfigured from Outworlder ability, quest system. Previous effects of racial ability, quest system, have been lost. Ignore the enhanced resistances derived from rank disparity. This only affects the enhanced resistance from being higher rank, not other sources of resistance. Ignore the enhanced aura suppression and aura suppression resistance derived from rank disparity. This only affects the enhanced effects from being higher rank, not the inherently superior strength of higher rank auras. Looting abilities used on higher rank monsters defeated by you will have increased effect.
Wait, no more quests? I have a lot of overhead costs coming up when I hit bronze.
The vast majority of the quests Jason had done were simple ones related to his Adventure Society work, earning him a nice bundle of money. As for the more exceptional quests, they had been the source of some of Jason's most important items, his essences, if nothing else. It looked like that part, at least, would still be a factor, with the new version enhancing the loot of more powerful monsters. The quest system was Jason's variant on the guidance power that all Outworlders apparently received. If the quests went away, did it mean he was no longer in need of guidance? Had this world truly become home? He suddenly felt further from his own world than ever. Jason sorted through the system messages for the relevant ones. Some of them were just garbled nonsense, he guessed, due to a combination of the suppression collar and the extreme stress being exerted on his soul, the source of all his powers. He dug out another relevant message.
Hey, this one's about you.
Ability, Sanguine Horror, Blood, has reached iron, 100%. Ability, Sanguine Horror, Blood, has reached iron, 9, 0, 0%. Ability, Sanguine Horror, Blood, has reached iron, 9, 100%. Ability, Sanguine Horror, Blood, has reached bronze, 0, 0, 0%. Ability, Sanguine Horror, Blood, has gained a new effect.
Ability, Sanguine Horror, Blood, Familiar, Ritual, Summon. Base cost, extreme mana, extreme stamina, extreme health. Cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0, 0, 0%. Effect, iron. Summon a Sanguine Horror to serve as a familiar. Effect, bronze. Summon a bronze rank vessel for your familiar with enhanced abilities. Ability, Sanguine Horror, Blood, cannot advance further until all attributes have reached bronze rank.
Look at you, mate, jumping all the way to bronze rank like a big boy.
Colin wiggled happily. Good thing I already picked up the materials for your next summoning ritual. I might have to brush up on the ritual knowledge, though, to make sure I do it right.
Jason pulled up another advancement message. Ability, Hegemony, Sin, has reached iron, 9, 100%. Ability, Hegemony, Sin, has reached bronze, 0, 0, 0%. Ability, Hegemony, Sin, has gained a new effect. Ability, Hegemony, Sin, Aura, Holy, Unholy. Base cost, none. Cooldown, none. Current rank, bronze, 0, 0, 0%. Effect, iron. Allies within the aura have increased resistance to afflictions, while enemies within the aura have their resistance to afflictions reduced. Enemy resistances are further reduced for each instance of sin they are suffering from. Effect, bronze, inflicts an instance of sin on enemies that make physical or magical attacks against allies within the aura. Instances applied in this way cannot be resisted. Ability, Hegemony, Sin, cannot advance further until all attributes have reached bronze rank.
Struth, that's a fair dinkum upgrade.
Sin was Jason's power that increased the effect of necrotic damage, and now any enemy attacking his team would stack up instances on themselves. That would combine nicely, not just with his own powers, but the abilities that Belinda and Neil had gotten from the Awakening Stones of the Reaper. There was one more important system message before Jason cleared off the stack.
New title, Spirit Warrior. Fighting off a concerted attack on your soul by a transcended entity has awakened your awareness of your own soul and refined your ability to use it as a weapon. The suppressive force and resistance to suppression of your aura is increased. You can use the suppression resistance of your aura to resist forms of magical suppression beyond just aura suppression. After fully suppressing the aura of others, you may use your aura to attack their soul directly. Your aura signature has changed. Your unyielding nature in the face of even the greatest power can be detected if your aura is examined by an aura sensing power or when projecting your aura. The echo of transcendent power within your aura is increased.
Jason sat looking at the description for a long time. His recollection of the Builder's attack on his soul wasn't a memory exactly. It was more like something imprinted on his soul, deeper and more enduring. His own attacks would doubtless be an empty echo of what the Builder had done to him, but it still wasn't something he wanted to do to another person.
"It's good," he told himself, unconvincingly. "Of course it's good."
He couldn't shake the questions rising up in the back of his mind. Exactly who and what were his experiences turning him into? He was already no longer human. When he finally found his way home, would anyone even recognize whatever it was he had become?
Chapter 22. Lingering Doubts.
A group of people made their way along to the marina towards the houseboat. It was led by Danielle Geller, along with Rufus, his mother, Arabelle, plus Clive and Vincent Trenslow, the Adventure Society official with the grandiose moustache. With them was a gold rank priest from the Church of the Healer, freshly portaled into the city.
"How is he?"
Danielle asked. It had been a little more than a week since Jason had been returned home.
"He was asleep for 4 days," Clive said. "Those medical potions of Jory's defer the need for healing recovery, which is impressive. But once it hit him hard."
"Unsurprising," the priest of the healer said. His name was Carlos, a broad-shouldered and swarthy man. His features had the polished perfection that was universal at gold rank. His clothes were not the robes of the healer, but a casual outfit. The brown colour and plain cut were reminiscent of the Church of the Healer's humble clerical wear, however. Only once they had lost their way did the healer's local clergy move into ostentatious variations.
"Even in the case of cultists who are accepting of it," Carlos continued, "introducing a starseed to the body is deeply traumatic. Removing it is even worse."
"I saw a starseed removed before it was rendered inert," Danielle said. "It wasn't traumatic. It was a meat grinder."
"Sadly true," Carlos said. "People were lost all over before we figured out who the cult was and what they were doing. From what you've told me about the situation here, you seem to figure things out before the Adventure and Magic Societies disseminated the information widely."
"Clive here is largely responsible for that,"
Danielle said. Clive looked sheepish.
"While we may have a better idea of what we're doing now," Carlos said, "we aren't always successful in helping the people the cult has implanted. Even when they're inert, extricating starseeds can be lethal without continuous healing. If your friend really managed it on his own, with a suppression collar around his neck, that's deeply impressive. What has he been doing since he woke up?"
"He's been under self-imposed house arrest, at my suggestion," Danielle said.
"He's been on the roof deck of the houseboat for days," Rufus said. "He got up, had breakfast, and went up there 3 days ago. I don't think he's come back down since. He's just been up there, meditating the whole time."
"It's very likely that he's aura training," Carlos said. "In cases of soul trauma, practicing aura control can help re-establish the sense of self. Many people realize this instinctively, while others we strongly suggest it too. Actually having the instruction in aura manipulation beforehand is obviously a tremendous help."
They arrived at the houseboat. Vincent told the Adventure Society official stationed on the dock that he could go. One way or another, Jason would no longer be under confinement.
He must be inside, Danielle said. I don't sense his aura at all.
He's up top,
Rufus's mother, Arabelle, said. She tilted her head, as if straining to hear something, then frowned.
His aura isn't retracted, she said. It's suppressed.
Using her gold rank strength, she vaulted directly up to the roof of the houseboat. Danielle had the others all touch one another in a chain connection, ending in her, and teleported them up. They found Jason sitting peacefully, in a cross-legged meditation pose with a suppression collar around his neck. He opened his eyes as they arrived on the rooftop.
Jason, Clive asked in horror, what are you doing with that collar?
This close, they could all feel the suppressive power of the collar with their own aura senses. They were all startled as Jason's aura emerged from within it, pushing it back. He took a key from his storage space, unlocking the collar and putting it and the collar away. Aura training, Jason said, pushing himself lightly to his feet.
Fascinating, Carlos said. The ability to counter the magic suppression with aura is a phenomenon that I've heard of, but never actually thought I'd see.
I didn't know that something like that was even possible, Rufus said.
Extreme soul trauma can prompt some unusual reactions, Carlos said. From time to time, some unscrupulous researcher will attempt to study it. They'll take essence users and subject them to all manner of soul torture to try and figure out a process by which to reliably gain special soul effects. The cost in misery and lives is unconscionable. It's all for nothing as well, because the research never goes anywhere. The most anyone had ever achieved was a few people with enhanced resistance to aura suppression, and a lot of people who died in agony.
I've heard of instances like that, Clive said.
Soul trauma is actually my specialty field of healing, Carlos said. I've seen more victims of these atrocities than anyone, and I've come to my own conclusion. The soul withstanding the trauma and growing isn't about the process, but the person.
Don't I feel special? Jason said, flatly. Do you have a name, soul trauma expert?
Sorry, I'm being rude. Carlos Guilido, Church of the Healer.
Jason looked at him coldly. You're here to decide my fate?
I'm here to help you, Carlos said,
showing no signs of being affected by Jason's rudeness.
If you truly don't have a starseed in you, I'm here to prove that definitively and excise any lingering doubts. If you do have one inside you, I'm here to excise it.
Jason frowned unhappily. You're right, I'm sorry, he said. It's just that I've been awaiting judgment for days.
I completely understand, Carlos said. I have some experience with people in similar circumstances to yours. Because of my specialty, the Church and the Adventure Society have had me traveling around to work with people who've had star seeds extracted from them. For the most part, the cult only implants their own members, but they will implant them in others when it serves their purposes. You aren't the first in this city to endure that, I understand. The Church of Purity first developed the extraction techniques, but we, the Church of the Healer, have taken over that task.
I've never understood why Purity's clergy would do that, if they're secretly working with the cult, Rufus said. Because the best way to hide a secret alliance is under the guise of an enemy, Jason said.
Exactly, Danielle agreed. The implanting of starseeds in non-members of the cult has always been a distraction from their actual goals. That is as true everywhere else as it was here.
I have a question about the people who were implanted and had them removed, Jason said to Carlos. It sounds like you might have the answer, if you don't mind.
Certainly, Carlos said.
The people who implanted me, Jason said, they told me that once you let the seed into the soul, the Builder has you. For good. That once you open that door, you're done. It makes me wonder about the people who have had the seeds extracted.
My understanding is that it was not the cult that implanted you. It sounds like whoever these people were, their information about the star seeds was not complete. It is true that the Builder imprints itself on the soul of those who relinquish access. Without the Starseed as a channel, however, the Builder cannot exert control. As best we can understand, the people in question do truly regain themselves, although obviously very changed for the experience. Not to cheapen your experiences, but they suffered and were changed even more than you. Unfortunately, they were damaged more than you as well.
I can imagine, Jason said. I feel like a different person, and my soul wasn't breached. If I'd opened that door.
Quite, Carlos said. There is a rather disturbing trend we have discovered of people previously implanted feeling a compulsion left behind by the Builder.
What kind of compulsion? Jason asked.
To seek out another starseed. There seems to be a longing for the power it promised. Most resist that urge, knowing how self-destructive it is. Some of them no longer have the will to resist and give in to it. We have them all watched now, including the ones here in Greenstone. I understand one local was lost before that protocol was put in place.
It's unconfirmed, Daniel said. But yes, the son of a friend.
It's strange feeling sorry for Thadwick, Jason said.
So, you're some kind of big deal, Mr. Quillado.
I wouldn't say that, and please call me Carlos. I just have a specialty that is tragically useful in these unfortunate times. Annabelle and I have worked together in the past, and she contacted me after what happened to you.
Jason shared an apologetic smile between Carlos and Arabelle.
You came all this way to help, and I was rude to you from the moment we met.
Seriously? Clive asked. All this time, and you apologize to this guy?
I don't understand, Carlos said.
Don't mind Clive, Jason said. He's been crabby ever since I slept with his wife.
I don't have a wife.
Yeah, I'm a homewrecker, Jason said winsomely, turning to look off into the middle distance. When you're down with the OPP, that's the life you live.
What are you even looking at? Clive asked.
I feel like I'm missing something, Carlos said.
Get used to that feeling, Rufus said. I think we just found out that it's the real Jason in there.
What is it that Humphrey says? If you don't understand what Jason is talking about, he's probably up to something, Clive said. If you do know what Jason's talking about, he's definitely up to something.
Returning to normal behavior is a good sign, Carlos said. Whatever normal behavior means. Do not underestimate the impact of these events, however. Essence users are mentally resilient by nature as a survival mechanism. The damage is not gone, however, merely forestalled. If the seed was resisted, we would expect to see behavior consistent with trauma emerging over time. There will be permanent changes. Soul damage is something that marks you forever.
We would expect to see? Jason said, echoing Carlos's words. Surely I'm not the only one to resist a seed implantation.
No, Carlos said. We know of at least 6 instances, but there are doubtless more. Under normal circumstances, star seeds of the Builder are implanted by cultists of the Builder. If a seed is rejected, it generally kills the person. If they survive, the cult kills them. The unusual circumstances of your implantation have allowed you to escape without the cult killing you by simple virtue of their absence. I am curious how you purged the seed from your body and survived without assistance.
It wasn't without assistance, Jason said. My familiar heals me. He worked like a trooper to keep me alive.
I would be fascinated to examine it.
Jason's face froze. You can prod and poke me all you like, he said in a voice of hard granite. You come after Colin, though, and I don't care who sent you or what rank you are. I will find a way to kill you. The temperature dropped as everyone fell silent at Jason's sudden turn. The group looked nervous at the revelation that Jason's return to his old self was a constructed facade. Rufus thought back to Jason's first days in the city, where his vulnerability was likewise hidden behind his over-the-top personality. Only Carlos seemed unfazed by the outburst.
Understood, he said. I will take you up on that prodding and poking. There's a reason the Church and Adventure Society so readily approved Arabelle's request to have me portaled here. Your survival presents a unique opportunity to learn more about the starseed implantation process. Hidden within your body and experiences may be insight that lets us help others. Mr. Asano, you are the only known instance of someone both surviving the rejection and the aftermath. The hope is that we can improve the process by which we extract star seeds from the cult's victims.
I'm sorry, Jason said. You have larger concerns than just me, I know.
You don't need to apologize to anyone after what you went through, Carlos said. But you are right about larger concerns. In many respects, the Builder has orchestrated a war on our world that we didn't even know about until he was winning. Anything we can learn to catch up is essential knowledge.
I'm not sure how much I can help you, Jason said.
Anything we can find out will obviously be excellent, Carlos said with an open smile.
First and foremost, though, I am a priest of the healer. Before anything else, I'm here to help you, not for you to help me.
Chapter 23 Scars. Carlos worked with Clive, directing him to draw out a ritual circle on the rooftop.
This is a damage echo ritual, Carlos explained. It will let me examine the history of physical damage to Mr. Asano's body.
As Jason stood in the middle of the circle, a man-shaped image of light appeared above him, with red and blue lines running through it like veins. Carlos waved his hand, manipulating the image. The mark of Jason's first scar appeared, bright and glaring across his torso. Carlos slowly and methodically went through everything, although much of the image was an abstraction, incomprehensible without the appropriate knowledge.
This is actually rather easy, Carlos observed as he worked. Because your body is less than a year old, everything is quite clear, excellent for obtaining definitive results.
Eventually he ended the ritual.
This is consistent from what we've seen in others we believe to have rejected the seeds, Carlos said. They were all dead, though, so we were working from corpses. The information we have isn't ideal.
You said there had been six that you knew of?
Clive asked.
Those are just the ones we found, Carlos said. We don't know what the actual numbers are. Obviously, it requires a series of ameliorating factors to even give someone a chance. As to how many more individuals resisted the star seeds and were killed without being found, we just don't know.
How accurately can you determine my condition if corpses are your basis for comparison? Jason asked.
Even from corpses, we could find specific differences between those who rejected the seed and those who were forced to accept it and then had it removed. If you think of the body as a field, the seed plows that field over, ready for planting. If the field accepts the seed, we see changes as the seed takes root. If the seed is rejected, however, all we get is overturned earth. The ground has been torn up, but the seed won't grow.
So, he's in the clear? Rufus asked. No star seed?
Vincent, standing next to Rufus, could sense his agitation. He slipped his hand into Rufus's and gave it a reassuring squeeze. Rufus gave him a grateful glance.
Provisionally, I am willing to say that indications are good. Because Mr. Asano's body is young enough, the results are unambiguous. The Adventure Society and my church, however, require me to also conduct an examination of your soul, Mr. Asano.
If you're going to have a rummage in my soul, Jason said, we should probably be on a first-name basis.
The soul examination isn't invasive, Carlos said. It can't be. If the Builder can't get in there, I certainly can't. It will expose your soul to scrutiny, however, which I have found makes people feel very exposed. The feeling is something like having your aura completely suppressed. I can tell you this from experience, having had the same ritual performed on me.
We could have used that ritual a few months ago, Daniel said.
It's a gold rank ritual, Carlos said. Not easy to disseminate or use, especially in a place like Greenstone. Also, this version of the ritual is new, devised specifically for this circumstance. I had myself be the first person put through it to experience what others would be going through. But you are our first actual living subject, Jason. The next ritual will create a projection of your soul that I can examine to confirm that it has not been breached. The sensation is something like projecting your aura, except there will be a powerful flood of energy to make the projection much more powerful than normal.
That's a reliable test, Rufus asked.
Very, Carlos said. If Mr. Asano, Jason, has ever let anything alien into his soul, it will be very evident. This ritual is only now being spread by the Magic Society to test for suspected starseed recipients. Fortunately, the Builder takes time to overcome the sense of self-preservation when he forces unwilling victims to open up their souls. Only those who have been seeded for extended periods are willing to detonate themselves when captured.
If he does have a starseed in him, Daniel asked, will this ritual harm Jason before we can have it extracted?
No. It will just be a projection of the soul, nothing more. But, as I said, it's a profoundly uncomfortable experience. The sense of exposure or vulnerability is very real.
Not an issue, Jason said.
That's easy to say, Carlos said. What the ritual reveals won't just be visible, although that will be a part of it. Anyone with aura senses will be able to sense your fully exposed soul. This is especially true because the ritual incorporates an amplification element. Jason, your soul is only iron rank, and I need to examine it clearly, so the projection will be more powerful than your normal aura projection. For that reason, I suggest we move to an enclosed ritual room instead of a high open space on a busy marina.
No, Jason said, his voice almost a growl. I want people to see.
His friends looked at him with concern, but remained silent.
Let's get started then, Carlos said.
Clive used his powers to rebalance the ambient magic and started drawing out the ritual circle from a book Carlos handed him.
The visual representation will be quite noticeable, Carlos explained as he supervised Clive's work, particularly given our choice of venue. The appearance will be rather similar to your personal crest if you have one. I do not, so I was rather curious when I underwent this ritual myself. My soul, as it turns out, looks like a sparkly apple, presumably because I'm sweet and fresh.
Jason chuckled as his friends looked on awkwardly. After his brooding behavior and recent outburst, they weren't sure how to look at him.
That's an excellent job, Carlos assessed,
looking over the finished ritual circle. It was easily the most sophisticated circle Jason had ever seen. Normally, Clive's power drew out magic diagrams in glowing golden lines. Most of the circle was still gold, but it featured a rainbow of colors in various sections, from vibrant red to cool green and bright sky blue.
I'd be tempted to let you conduct the ritual yourself, Mr. Standish, if channeling the power of a gold rank ritual wouldn't make you explode.
You mentioned that this is a gold rank ritual earlier, Rufus said. I didn't think that a ritual of that rank was possible, with a low magical density in this region.
Normally, no, Carlos said. You could probably perform a silver rank ritual here if you were careful, but not a gold. We'll be using mana condensers.
Carlos started taking what looked like simple lamps from his dimensional bag and placing them in the corners of the rooftop deck. Where the glowstone would go in a normal lamp, these had swirling lights of blue, silver, and gold. It looked very much like the light shed by the transcendent damage of Jason's execute power.
Mana condensers are a tool for performing rituals requiring a higher magic density than is available in the local area, Clive explained as Carlos set them out. You charge them up, quite slowly, in a low magic area, and they can create an artificial field of high-density ambient magic. Very inefficient, but if it's what you need, it's what you need.
He set out the lamps, along with other materials, most of which seemed to be different colored crystals. There were also a number of gold spirit coins that, if you ignored certain items like the Cloud Palace, was more than all the wealth in Jason's possession.
Seems like a waste of coin, Jason said.
If you're short on money, the Church of the Healer will be happy to help you out, Carlos said. The information we get here will be critical going forward. If you're willing to dedicate a number of hours to go over your experience and answer some questions as best you can, maybe undergo an extra ritual or three to examine your condition, we can and will pay well for information on a subject that is very hard to come by right now.
It'll help people, right?
Jason asked.
Very much so, Carlos said. Even with the guidance of our God, the current methods we have for extracting starseeds are crude and brutal. Not everyone survives. The information we can potentially get from studying you could help us improve those methods significantly.
Helping people and getting paid for my trouble, Jason said. Sounds like adventuring to me.
Wait, you're letting this guy study you? Clive complained. I ask you all the time.
He wants help healing people, Jason said. Not help streamlining his bureaucratic process.
Bureaucratic process? Clive complained. Do you have any idea how critical the work of the Magic Society is to...
Clive trailed off as he saw Jason's familiar sly grin and started muttering complaints to himself.
Just about ready, Carlos said. For this one, everyone else should go down to that lower deck. Mr. Standish, you can stay if you think you have the expertise to avoid tainting the ritual.
I probably can, but I'd rather not take the risk, Clive said,
following the others down the stairs to the lower deck. From below, they could hear, but not see, the ritual being conducted. The chant was not in words, but unintelligible sounds.
Non-linguistic chants are very difficult, Clive said, but they become more and more common in the higher rank rituals.
Around them on the marina, the surge of magic from the roof deck was drawing attention. The wealthy marina patrons tended to be essence users, many with perception powers that could sense the changes in the ambient magic. Those pointed out the surge in ambient magic density to others. When the ritual was completed, every essence user in the marina and many in the marina north district of the city felt an aura blast out. Incredibly domineering, but not the individual power of a sovereign. It was more like a celestial law had passed over the area, filled with unyielding resolve and an echo of divine power. Beyond the feel of the aura, it carried with it an overbearing suppressive force. Bronze rankers and above were able to withstand the surging aura, while iron rankers without solid aura control found themselves shaken and shivering. The only member of Jason's team present was Clive, who weathered the aura surge despite being at the epicenter. After resuming his adventuring after years as a Magic Society official, he had benefited from Farah's aura training alongside Jason. The people without aura sensors actually fared better than the essence users. Their lack of sensitivity gave them no more than a foreboding sense of unease. High above the roof deck, darkness spread like a sinister cloud, covering a huge space. It was not a complete darkness, but contained a spread of dim, feeble stars, like an oppressive night sky. Within the darkness, indistinct shapes moved and shifted, defined only by being darker than the sky around them. It was hard to make out their shapes or follow their movements, but what onlookers could see of the unnerving alien forms made them glad they could not. In the center of the darkness, a cluster of stars started glowing brighter, taking on the form of a cloak. The cloak opened and expanded, revealing that within was a clear blue sky and bright sun, like a universe contained within a dark void. The dark shapes immediately converged on the starlight cloak, tearing at it with shadowy claws. They rent the cloak, but from every tear, sunlight flared out in the form of bright, grasping tendrils, clutching at the dark figures. They wrapped around the dark alien shapes, which dissolved away like morning mist exposed to the sun. As they did, horrifying shrieks emerged from the projection with each dark entity that was annihilated. People looked up at the projection from all across the marina, feeling the source of the strange aura that had washed over them.
"This is Jason's soul," Rufus asked. "You saw his personal crest, right, Clive?"
"Yeah," Clive said weakly. "It was kind of like this, but it didn't have those things in it. Are they the starseed? Did it get in after all?"
"No," Carlos called out from above. His gold rank sensors easily heard their conversation, even over the screeching.
"They're the aftermath of the war he fought for his soul. The soul doesn't scar the same way the body does."
Carlos had not been anticipating anything like the power of the soul projection the ritual produced. He was worried that the gold rank ritual was filtering too much power through Jason's soul to create the projection, but Jason seemed unperturbed. He was standing in the middle of the circle, eyes closed and completely relaxed. Satisfied that Jason's soul was unviolated, Carlos brought the ritual to an end, the aura fading away and the image dissolving into nothing. Chapter 24. I won't let them turn me into that. Jason didn't go straight back to adventuring after his ordeal with the Starseed. Instead, he spent his time in training and recovery. His team spent their days participating in the hunt for Killian Laurent, whose possession and use of the Starseed had made him a priority in the efforts to locate and fight against the cultists. He potentially had valuable information, and unlike the suicide-prone cultists, he might be possible to capture. At the same time, Silver had been locked up in the Adventure Society's prison tower, being asked some very pointed questions. It didn't help with the search for Laurent, only revealing the depth of ignorance Silver had about his former henchmen. Silver did volunteer other information that was more actionable, however. Unless someone had a specific power to do so, most long-distance communication was conducted through speaking chambers. Two chambers could be connected, allowing the person in each chamber to project into a water clone in the other. Most speaking chambers were housed within and operated by the Magic Society branches. One of the perks of being a branch director was the use of a private speaking chamber annexed to their office. Lucian Lamprey was using his, but the man on the other end was not telling him what he wanted to hear. "We don't have anyone who's been there to open a portal, Lucian. Why would we? It's just an out-of-the-way provincial city that probably wouldn't exist if not for the Spirit Coin farms."
"Surely you can find someone," Lamprey asked.
"Probably, but I won't."
"You were banished there for a reason, Lucian. You're all out of friends here."
"All I need is one portal out."
The person on the other end of the communication sighed.
"I have someone who can portal to Hornus. If you can get there, I can maybe arrange something. It'll cost you, though."
"You owe me, from the old days."
"The old days are over, Lucian. I don't owe you a thing. Get to Hornus and message me again. We can work something out, if you have something to offer."
Lamprey went to speak, but the person on the other end severed the connection. The water that made up the clone lost its animating force and splashed back into the pool. Lamprey stormed out of the tiled booth.
"Hornus,"
he muttered to himself. It was a port city, like Greenstone, south and around the coast. He would either have to take a ship and risk someone exposing his departure, or go overland, east into the veldt, and then south. He decided that was the safer route, as the desert was not a threat to a silver ranker. He opened the hidden safe in his office, shoving the contents into a dimensional bag before making for the door. Just as he left his office, he spotted Danielle Geller at the far end of the long hallway. She spotted him in turn.
"Leaving?" she called out to Lamprey. "That works out, because you need to come with me."
"I'm busy right now, Lady Geller," Lamprey said. "Another day."
"Oh, I insist," Danielle said.
They stared at each other down the hall for a long moment. Then, as if someone waved a starter's flag, they both sprang into motion. Lamprey clapped his hands together in front of him, creating a wave of force that sent cracks along the stone walls, floor and ceiling. The art lining the walls was ripped apart, the windows shattered, and floor tiles exploded, throwing up dust and debris that shrouded the hallway. His attack was late before it had even begun. Trying to move faster than Danielle Geller was an exercise in futility. By the time the hallway started erupting, she had already teleported behind him, her blade cutting into his thick neck muscle. Lamprey was power to Danielle's speed, however, and her sword barely dug into the flesh. He reached up and grabbed the blade, while ramming his other elbow back into Danielle's chest. His incredible strength fired her back like a rocket, through the doorway and across his office, where she bounced roughly off the wall. Lamprey turned around, Danielle's sword still gripped in his hand by the blade. He probed the wound with his free hand as he watched her push herself back to her feet.
"I knew you were tough," she said. "But I thought that would do more."
"You'll have to cut me like that 1,000 times if you want me to go down,"
Lamprey sneered. Danielle gave him a predatory smile in return.
"Deal."
She vanished, as did her sword, leaving behind a cut in Lamprey's hand. Bloody lines started appearing on his body, Danielle's movement nothing but a blur. Even once his Adventure Society minder was gone, Jason rarely left the houseboat. Most of his time was spent refining his aura control. He quickly reached the point where he could completely negate the effects of an iron rank suppression collar, and had begun working with a bronze rank one. He could only hold off its effects for a few moments, but he knew exactly how valuable a few moments could be. When he did leave, he remained unnoticed. He moved through Old City unseen, practicing his shadow teleportation. He needed it to reach bronze rank, hopefully opening a path back to the Order of the Reaper's astral space and the Builder cultists within. Jason's friends clearly wanted to be supportive, although they were largely at a loss as to how. Joining the pursuit for Killian was their way to try to find some closure on Jason's ordeal. In the meantime, Carlos and Arabelle both came by the houseboat daily, carefully talking Jason through the events of his capture and escape. Arabelle helped him explore the traumatic memories, for those strange feelings imprinted on his soul when he had no mind to form memories, Carlos had techniques to help. Guided meditation was a large part of it, as was teaching Jason about the soul from a magical theory perspective. Jason's grasp of magical theory was continually improving, and he was able to follow along with at least the fundamentals of what Carlos was talking about. "Some people find a more intuitive approach helpful," Carlos told him. "Others, like you, seem to get more from understanding the way the soul functions magically. Understanding and breaking down what they went through helps them process it." One day, Carlos and Arabelle arrived at the houseboat with Arabelle's old team of her husband, the stealthy and enigmatic Callum Morse, and Emir. Also with them were Danielle Geller, Constance, and Hester.
"We wanted to come earlier," Emir told Jason. "Arabelle said it was best to wait."
Although his original purpose in Greenstone had been concluded, Emir's operation at Sky Scar Lake continued. Knowing that the Builder cult had infiltrated the astral space there, his people had been trying to find a way back in. Jason had been keeping something under his hat, not wanting to speak up until he was certain, but changed his mind. "You asked me before if Shade had any insights that might help you get back into the astral space," Jason told him. "I didn't say anything at the time, but there might be something."
"Oh?"
Emir asked. "We can't test it out until my shadow teleport power reaches bronze rank," Jason said.
"Not what we're here for," Arabelle said, heading off the conversation.
"What are you here for?" Jason asked. "Not that I don't appreciate the well wishes." Carlos and Arabelle, as it turned out, had arranged an adventurer group therapy session. Jason had been through a lot, but no adventurer reached silver and gold rank without their own horror stories. In the past, Jason had felt a step between himself and the experienced upper rankers he knew. As they each shared their own tribulations, he felt a new sense of belonging. It was something he had been missing even before his recent troubles. His very nature as an outworlder marked him as an outsider. To share his story with others and have them share theirs in turn was like a puzzle piece fitting into the right space. As they left the boathouse afterwards, Danielle took Jason aside.
"Someday, Humphrey and the others will face similar problems," she told him.
Jason nodded, understanding. Neither of them needed to say more. It had been almost 2 months since Jason last set foot on the Adventure Society campus. He glanced over at the prison tower where both Lucian Lamprey and Cole Silver were incarcerated. The ultimate fate of neither man had yet been decided. After the disastrous expedition and the subsequent wave of demotions, the campus had, for a time, become an almost desolate place. Then, after the Reaper trials, it had been overrun with time-displaced priests. With the expedition months gone, and the priests sent off to whatever their new lives had become, it was back to the same bustle of activity Jason remembered from his early days as an adventurer. A lot of people were looking his way, either with furtive glances or openly staring. One woman even pointed right at him as she whispered to her companions. He ignored it as he made his way into the administration building and rode the elevating platform to the 5th floor. "Morning, Bert," Jason spotted Albert behind the executive-level reception desk. "I see from your aura that the training is coming along." "Oh, you're one to talk, Mr. Asano. Bertram was working guard duty on the bridge when you set off your little display. You gave him a right good scare." "You can put that down to the ritual I was going through. Not me." "If you say so, Mr. Asano. Welcome back, by the way. It's good to see you out and about, after what happened." "What exactly are people saying, Bert?" "All sorts, Mr. Asano. You know what rumours are like. Magic mind control, crime lords, and now Delecta Lamprey locked up in the prison tower. It's all very exciting, but no one seems sure if you're victim or perpetrator, if you don't mind me saying. And that's without that business with the aura projection. Nobody knows what to make of that. Plus, there's talk of some village that got destroyed, the Duke sending out all those people and materials to rebuild." "Thank you, Bert. If you don't mind me asking, Mr. Asano, what did happen?" Jason thought about it for a moment. "Cole Silver and Lucian Lamprey tried to deal with me using the Builder cult as a weapon." "It doesn't seem to have worked out so well for them," Albert said. "You being here and them locked up in the tower. It all came good in the end, then." "It isn't the end," Jason said grimly. "Not until the cultists have been dragged out of their holes and tossed right out of our world." "Well, I don't think I'd bet against you, Mr. Asano." "You know what, Bert? Neither would I." Jason sat down across from Elspeth Arella. Tabitha Gert and her inquiry team had decamped from Greenstone while he had been on the road contract, and Arella was once again in charge.
"Mr. Asano?"
"Director?"
"We have something of a contentious past, you and I."
"We do," Jason agreed. "Rufus Ramore agreed to put his support behind you in return for your father's help, however, and your father delivered. Since Rufus's support absolutely includes me, then you can consider yourself to have mine, for whatever worth you find that to have." Arella examined Jason for a moment in silence. He was worlds apart from the brash, arrogant boy he had seemed in the past. The arrogance was still there, an unmistakable challenge in the eyes. But the precocious boy had been replaced with a steely-faced man.
"I have been looking at my tenure, following the inquiry, as a fresh start," she said, finally. "Perhaps you and I could do the same."
"That seems fair," Jason said.
"Very well. Then on to business. I understand that Daniel Geller has been keeping you apprised of the investigation into Silver and now Lamprey."
"That's right."
"As the primary charges against them are against an Adventure Society member, the Adventure Society will be dealing with them. As it also involves the Builder cult, the decisions regarding them will be made above my level. I understand that Tabitha Gert will be portaling in to take them both. As the victim, however, you have the right to be heard in regards to their ultimate dispensation."
"I prefer not to think of myself as a victim," Jason said. "Also, giving the victims a say might feel right, but that's a tool of vengeance, not justice."
"You don't want revenge?"
"Of course I do," Jason said.
If you'd asked me what to do with them 3 weeks ago, I'd have said hang them from a tree and beat them until fabulous prizes come out. But that's not the person I want to be, and I won't let them turn me into that. So long as they aren't put in a position to keep hurting people, I don't care what happens to them.
How very considered. Does Miss Wexler feel the same way?
I don't think you should try for a fresh start with her, Jason said. She knows that you tried to sell her off to Lamprey and has different feelings about vengeance than I do. But you and I both made mistakes that she almost paid the price for, so I won't go casting any stones.
We'll leave it at that, then.
And move on to the next issue. Northeast Quarry Village, number 4. You did excellent work there. Thank you, Jason said.
You and Henrietta Geller did a superlative job of building the Adventure Society's reputation.
Also helping people, Jason said.
Yes, of course. The Society would like to show its gratitude by supplying the materials required to resummon all your familiars, the ones you lost in that encounter, as well as the one that has now reached bronze rank.
You seem to know a lot about the state of my familiars.
This reward was suggested by your team. Mr. Standish provided the list of supplies. I had to have someone portal them in, but after the expedition, I've made a policy of always keeping a portal user on hand. Sending them all off together was a mistake I won't make again.
Jason gave it a short moment's consideration, then nodded. Thank you, he said.
If you speak to the receptionist, he will direct you to pick them up. That just leaves the issue of your star ranking. Tabitha Gert promised that if you conduct yourself acceptably, your rank will be restored to 3 stars. I think we can safely say that has happened. You will be needing a new badge because of the changes to your aura and your personal crest, so please present yourself to the Magic Society at your convenience.
Speaking of my aura, Jason said, are there any repercussions I need to know about following the aura projection incident?
Not that you need to concern yourself with.
Chapter 25. Putting the Band Back Together. In the wake of Cole Silver's arrest, his organization fell into chaos as Silver's cousins fought to seize control. At first, it was restricted to carefully feeling out key people and quietly garnering loyalty. As days passed into weeks without a definitive leader rising up, it started causing trouble with street-level operations, and the conflict became bloodier. In the midst of all this, Killian's trail was finally found, but far too late. It was eventually discovered that he had decamped the city entirely, taking a ship loaded with a good chunk of Cole Silver's ill-gotten holdings. Until the crew of that boat turned up somewhere, it was a dead end. Jason felt that he turned a corner in his recovery with the resummoning of his familiars. He began with Gordon and then Shade, grateful to discover that they were the same familiars he had previously. While the bodies of the familiars would be the same with each summoning, the astral spirits inhabiting them could be different if the original spirits did not want to re-enter his service.
"Your soul is rather changed," Shade observed. "You have been through an ordeal in the time I've been gone."
"It's been rough," Jason acknowledged. "Glad to have you back, mate."
"I am also glad to return," Shade said. "The Reaper's Realm is a rather monotonous place. I did take the time to make inquiries while I was there, however, under the assumption that you survived to resummon me. I am now more confident about accessing the Order of the Reaper's astral space."
Resummoning Colin was another thing entirely. Summoning his new bronze rank vessel would require a bronze rank ritual. Part of his recovery time had been spent continuing his study of magical theory, and he had the instinctive understanding of his power to guide him. Despite this, he wasn't entirely confident about handling the increased sophistication and power the higher rank ritual would require. He discussed the issue with Clive, who had a suggestion.
"You have that bronze rank skill book, right? The one you took from Landemere Vane?"
Jason did, indeed, still have skill books detailing bronze rank ritual and astral magic.
They require bronze rank to use, though, Jason said.
So fake it,
Clive said.
Use a spirit coin before you use the skill book. It'll be a strain, but nothing you can't handle after what you've been through.
Jason took Clive's advice. Taking a seat in his cloud house, he consumed a bronze rank spirit coin under Clive's supervision, with Neil on hand in case it became too much. Unlike his previous uses, his enhanced awareness of his own soul let him sense exactly what the coin was doing to him. It flushed through his soul harmlessly, merging with his own power before flooding into his body. He gained a better understanding of the cost of using spirit coins, as he could clearly feel the power was more than his body could contain. He would only be able to briefly use the power surge before his body blew a fuse and shut off. Hurriedly, he used the skill book. As with the previous one he had used, the text floated out of the book, becoming a magical cloud hovering around him. The power of the coin faded, leaving him feebly slumped in the chair, but it had done its work. Without reaching a false bronze rank state, he wouldn't have been able to trigger the book at all. When the cloud of magical text started injecting itself into Jason's body, something went horribly wrong. Jason had experienced skill book use before, and this was less strenuous than the huge tome that had contained his martial art. At the time he used that skill book, though, he hadn't experienced the starseed implantation. It started with a familiar feeling as his body was invaded. The skill book's magic was entering his mind, not his soul, but it was close enough that it awakened buried flashes of memory. Suddenly he was back in that room, hanging from the ceiling, vulnerable and helpless, as his body and mind were invaded. Clive and Neil watched in horror as Jason tumbled out of the chair and onto his knees, clutching at his head and screaming. Neil started to cast a healing spell, but Clive stopped him.
Don't,
Clive warned urgently.
Muddling the magic going into him right now could do some real damage.
What do we do? Neil asked.
All we can do is let him go through it, Clive said unhappily.
Eventually the screaming stopped, and Jason was lying on the floor, looking up with blank eyes.
He's not breathing, Clive said.
He's been training, Neil said. I've been helping him with it. He doesn't breathe at all now.
After the problem with the skill book, Jason didn't move on to resummoning Colin right away. He continued to work with Arabelle, Carlos having departed the city. He was important to the starseed implantation recovery efforts and couldn't be spared for more than a couple of weeks on one person. He helped Jason through the worst, and Jason did everything he could to give Carlos information he could use to help others. It was the only reason the Adventure Society and his church had let him stay as long as he did. Having his other familiars back helped. Their presence in his soul was a comfort, a support when he awoke from a nightmare or suffered another flashback. He concentrated on other tasks, more training, but also more mundane affairs. One of them was his new beard. It was trimmed light, with a line next to the chin where a thin scar was. Another scar bisected his left eyebrow.
I'm still not sure about the beard, he said at breakfast.
I like it, Neil said. It covers your face.
No, it's really good, Belinda said. She was the one who suggested he keep it in the first place.
It doesn't make me look like a villain?
Isn't seeming like a villain kind of your thing?
Gary asked.
Stop discouraging him, Belinda said. It looks good, doesn't it, Soph?
Sophie looked up from her sausage and eggs to give Jason an intense stare. Finally, she nodded.
Your face is too pointy, she said. It softens the edges.
I'd have said that it flatteringly frames your facial structure, Belinda said. But I'd take it. For Sophie, that was a gushing compliment.
Eventually, Jason decided it was time to resummon Colin. After using the skill book, he had delved into the theory to consolidate his knowledge. Now he was as ready as he was going to be. After the skill book, his whole team was going to be present for support, along with Rufus and Gary. For each earlier familiar resummoning, he had hired out a ritual room in the Magic Society, rather than do it on the houseboat.
the cloud floor of the houseboat was not ideal for drawing out ritual circles, as it lacked the dedicated hard